So we're chanting the fourth verse of the Suksastikam, and if anybody memorizes it, then we can chant it together. Nadanam najanam na sundarin kavitam bhaja gadisa kamaye mama janmane mama jispure avatad bhakti rahete kitaye. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his eight Suksastikam verses, is dealing with Krishna consciousness. He is, in the beginning, establishing especially sambandha jnana, the connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how the devotee can connect by, first of all, one must accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in this day and age, that is difficult because there is so much confusion. So in the age of Kali, there is a special concession that even if one cannot accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as one is ready to chant his name, then the connection is made. As simple as that. Then in due course of time, Krishna will clearly establish himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Subsequently, the reasons are explained, because there is a secret. Kavi Karnapur is writing that the Lord has appeared in every home of Navadvip. So, is that the description, that Lord Chaitanya has appeared in every home of Navadvip? That? No, Lord Chaitanya is said to have appeared in the house of Jagannath Mishra and Mother Sachi. Right? Not in every home in Navadvip. Then what is he speaking? He's speaking about another incarnation of the Lord. Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatare. So it is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that in this age of Kali, the Lord incarnates himself in the form of his holy name. So it is in that incarnation that the Lord has appeared in every home of Navadvip, in the incarnation of the holy name. Huh. Such is the miracle of Lord Chaitanya, who appears simultaneously in his name, in the form of his name, and simultaneously in person. Right? And in this way, the Lord is appearing everywhere, all over the world. That is the nature of Lord Chaitanya. So, nam namakari bahudani jasaktis. In these transcendental names, I've invested all my transcendental energies. But we have no taste due to offenses against the holy name. So this is working two ways. It works that we may not chant the holy name because we have no taste, because we're making these offenses. Or it may be that we have some taste, but that we lose the taste by making offenses. So these offenses against the holy name are to be avoided. And in other words, there is a certain type of attitude required to really get the benefit of chanting. The third verse describes that attitude. Tenadapi sunichena tavarapi sahisuna. To be more humble than a straw in the street. Oh, the straw in the street, people trample upon the straw. The straw is blown by the wind in so many directions. Right? It's like, just has to accept, right? Wherever it winds up. That is the life of a straw. So lower than a straw in the street. In other words, one must be very detached. Right? One must be very peaceful in life. Whatever life brings, good things and bad things, one has to accept. Yes, today we're going in the good direction, and tomorrow the wind blows in the bad direction, and the straw is blown from here to there. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. Going to Spain tomorrow. So, whatever will be, will be. We have to accept this is life in the material world. Everything depends on the Supreme Lord. In Raksisya Titi Visvaso, a devotee knows that Krishna will never, never forsake his devotee. Therefore, we need not be worried at all. Krishna is looking after our interests. So we don't have to look after ourselves. We simply have to be pure. We simply have to be what he wants us to be. And then he'll look after our best interests automatically. And the nature of Krishna, when we look after our interest, then we try to get different things of which we think they can make us happy, but they will never make us fully happy. But when Krishna looks after our interest, he will give us things that by far exceed our expectations of happiness. So therefore, this is the process. Prabhupada uses that example that was taught to him by his father. It was a Bengali proverb, actually, that the Lord has ten hands, 10 arms. 10 arms because there are 10 directions described in the Vedic literatures. The 10 directions, north, south, east, west, and the directions in between, and upwards and downwards. These are the 10, or the zenith and the nadir. These are the 10 directions. And it said, if one covers the 10 directions, one covers all directions. So Krishna covers all directions. That's why he has 10 arms. And it is said that if Krishna wants to take with his 10 arms, what can we do with 2 to stop? Right? If someone has 10, you know, like, there's no question, you know. Like, he'll take whatever we have. And if Krishna wants to give, right, with ten arms, and we have only 2, how much will we get? We cannot not receive it. So each time that Krishna gives, he gives beyond our expectation, beyond our imagination. So when Krishna fulfills our desire, he will fulfill it beyond our imagination. Therefore, no need to be concerned so much about life in this world. I want this, I want that, I need this, I need that. Therefore, najanam najanam na sundarim, kavitam vajagadisam kamaye, mama janmani janmani svare bhavatat bhakti rahite kitvai. I am not attached to birth, not to wealth, not to followers. That is the prayer of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nor to beautiful women. For ladies, that means nor to men, right? Nor to attractive men. That is the same thing. It is said, for a woman, man is Maya. For a man, woman is Maya. Because it is said that when we are thinking that the relationship between man and woman will be the ultimate goal in life, and that will be which is the greatest thing on earth, the greatest thing in life, then we are in illusion. Then we build monuments like the Taj Mahal, right? Which is standing there as the emblem of mundane love, right? A big tomb, right? That's what it really is. Because that's all there is at the end. Right? Nothing remains of material relationships. They're temporary. So we cannot invest so much energy into these temporary relationships. Oh, they are there. That's all right. But in essence, the essence is our relationship with Krishna. It's more important than any other relationship in the world. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching. So such teachings are considered to be very high. But then this is a movement that is teaching the transcendental platform. It is not a religious movement. It is not a matter of belonging to this movement as one belongs to a church or to a mosque or to a temple. This movement, it is not enough if one belongs. It is not enough if one wears the dress. It is not enough if one says the prayers. It is not enough if one bows down on his knees with his head to the ground, right? Not an easy feat, right? all the way down, right? The first time we come in a temple and we see all these people just bowing down on the ground like that, you kind of stand there somewhat embarrassed, right? Thinking like, you know, what I do now, you know, do I go get out of this room or something? I mean, how can I disappear? Right? It's very uncomfortable. And then to get yourself to the point of doing it yourself, there you have to swallow again. Right? That's the whole thing. And like this, and then you have to bow down on different occasions. You have to bow down to the deities. What was for me the most difficult thing was to bow down to Tulsi, to bow down to a plant. I mean, that was something, you know. When they all went to bow down to a plant, then I was having some serious doubts. I was really thinking, like, phew. Whoa. It's going a long way now. We're going pretty far. So, is this really it? And now I happily dance around the Tulasi plant and bow down and with great devotion and praying for the mercy of Tulasi Devi. By the association of the Vaishnavas, all these things begin to make sense to us. What seems so far out at first begins to make sense, and gradually we see that the culture of our birth was actually full of unpleasantries and not very good habits at all. And we see that the new culture of Krishna consciousness is by far superior. And eventually, we begin to get realizations in Krishna consciousness. We are chanting in slokas to come, Ainanda Tanuchi Kinkaram Patitam Ambisame Bhavam Budo. We are beginning to see that ecstatic symptoms begin to manifest in devotees. That devotees are actually coming to the platform of being deeply attached to Krishna. That is a very high platform, and it will take time. So prior to that, it is said that in spiritual life, it begins with faith. Ado Shraddha. One has some faith, then tata sadhu sango. Then one can develop the desire to associate with devotees. And from that, one can become firmly situated in the process of Krishna consciousness. And which is called Bhajana Kriya. If one really becomes situated in devotional service, in Bhajana Kriya, it means one comes to the point of initiation, which basically means one makes a commitment for a lifetime. One says, now for a lifetime I will be a devotee. I will dedicate my life to this, for this lifetime. That is the real meaning of initiation. And one receives the mercy of the parampara, and in this way one can now go forward. Then the purification, anatta nivritti, takes place, and the next stage is nista, where one becomes firm in determination. Now, sometimes this progress is kind of depicted like a ladder, right? The model of this process of Krishna consciousness, which goes from Shraddha all the way to Prem, to love of God, from faith to love of God, is kind of depicted like a ladder and different stages. I don't like that model so much. I prefer that we use the more modern model of box graphs, you know, of like a graphs, skyscraper graphs, like a horizontal line with vertical boxes on it, next to each other. Because as our faith develops in Krishna consciousness, it comes automatically from sadhu sangha. Right? There's always due to sadhu sangha that something is coming. So the sadhu sangha also grows. Already there's purification immediately. So anatta nivritti also is already growing.
Right? And therefore the nista is also growing a little bit. So it's not that one day one is at strata and then bang, one goes to sadhu sangha, and then next stage, bhajanagriha, next stage now anatanagriti has started. You know, yes, we go, no, as we go deeper into the bhajana kriya, our sadhu sangha is also increasing in quality. And as the anartanivriti takes place, our bhajana kriya, our commitment to the process and going into the process becomes deeper and better also, and we get more and more benefit of it. And at the same time, our determination, our nista is already growing. Although there may be still some anartas in the heart, still our determination is growing day by day as we are getting more and more purified. We're experiencing like this. So there would say the box graph, where we see that these are growing simultaneously to some extent, right, is more relevant. But the focus is in one of these processes. Right? I'm not drawing it on the board, lazy as I am. It would be better, of course, but anyway, we have to. This is the time of the visual age, you know, everyone's grown up with TV and with computers, and if you don't see it nowadays, then you can't understand it, right? There's no such thing as like the imagination. The imagination is dead, you know. Reading is impossible. We want a cartoon. Right? This is modern times. But we have to use the imagination. So here are the graphs. Shraddha, faith. Next one. There is association with devotees. Next one. Becoming fixed up in the process. Next one. Purification. Next one. Determination, and firm determination. Next one, taste, ruchi. Next one, ashakti, deep emotional attachment to Krishna. Next one, bhava, it is a further very strong emotional attachment to Krishna, which now is no longer interrupted. Stai bhava, then prem. Love of God, the last one. So all these stages are there, and our focus is there, but little by little they all begin to develop, right, in the process. Okay, prem waits a little, right, that's very high. At present we're struggling with lust, and there where there's lust there can be no prem. So that's a problem then, isn't it? So prem may have to wait, because lust is very powerful, and therefore for now prem is on the shelf. Anyway, whatever may be, we are progressing like this. So, it is said in the advanced stages of chanting, one comes to ruchi. Ruchi is the taste. There is a real taste for chanting, a real taste for the process. One likes to chant. So we all get that sometimes. When Madhava does his bhajans, everyone is like, you look at everyone and everyone is sitting like, some are going like, and all the drummers there, you know, I mean it's like everyone's got his own drum or his own kit or his own special style or whatever it is, and it's like it's quite a rhythm session there. So everyone is like just floating, right? So there's taste, right? There's definitely taste. And even people that walk in for the first time get some tastes in these things. So taste is there. It's not that taste comes at a later stage. Taste comes very quick, right? Immediately. It is taste that is the driving force. If there was no taste, we wouldn't do it. I wouldn't be sannyasi for another day if there was no taste. Forget it, you know. Shoot, walk around like this. No way. I wouldn't do it. But there is a taste. There is a taste. Yes. So the secret is to cultivate this taste, to increase this taste. So partially, one can increase the taste by accepting some regulative process. The neophyte wants to immediately run after the taste. Say, oh, my taste is here, oh, my taste is there, now I want to do this, no, now I want to do that. But this does not help, because the mind is restless. So one must therefore accept some regulation in spiritual life.
to increase one's tastes. It's very important. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is a very regulated process. Never before in my life have I been so regulated as since I was in this movement. Right? Getting up at the same time, the same thing, every day at the same time. It's amazing. Right? I mean, before, you know, I was like, well, you know, one day sleep long, one, you know, sometimes go to bed at 10 and sometimes go to bed at 4 or anywhere in between. And that was just, you know, as it was happening, right? As the inspiration was going. Sometimes you have a book, you know, it's exciting, you read the whole night, right? But as a devotee, you know, even the most exciting book, like 10 o'clock, you know. Leave it there. Go to bed, right? You know, duty calls again. Time to go to bed, because 4 o'clock, there it goes again. Get up, mongolite, the whole thing. So this is within this strict discipline, we build up the taste, right? And we build up a much stronger taste than just the impulsive taste of going here and there, just by building up the momentum. Right? So then the taste really becomes strong. So one must build up this momentum in chanting. Therefore, Sankhya Purva Ganama Gana Natibi. This momentum is very important in spiritual life. That carries us, right, to develop the positive habit. And then, Ruchi is the taste for the spiritual process. The next stage after Ruchi is Ashakti. Ashakti is attachment to Krishna, is actual strong feelings of attachment to Krishna. So that comes because there is no difference between the process and Krishna. So obviously one's going to realize that very strongly and develop genuine attachment for Krishna. Of course, attachment for Krishna already comes earlier, and one can easily cultivate that. We have the holy name, we have the deities. So one must serve the deities. One must become active in relation to the deities. If one has the opportunity to go on the altar, one should never let it go by. Everyone should sometimes go on the altar, do some service for the deities. This is important. It's very nice. Of course, there are different services one can do for the deities. It's true, I like to sing for the deities, right? That's like some of the things. I mean, I'm better at that than incense. And dressing, forget it. I can't even dress myself. What to speak of the deities, you know. I can never get cloth straight. I don't know what it is about cloth. There's always, it's never straight. Right? So you try the deity. You know. Too much like this, you know. I put the turban. Too much in the eyes. I put it up. Too high. Okay, maybe a little bit to one side. Too much on one ear. Try the other ear. Too much like that, you know. After a while, I get totally mental. Forget it, you know. I get it. So, I've never been very good in dressing deities. So, I usually sing. I'm better at that. That's what I do for the pleasure of the deities. Whatever it may be. But we must render some service to the deities. Right? We must feel that strong relationship with the deities. Having lived in Vrindavan, that is one of the great gifts that you get from living in the Holy Dham. Because in the Holy Dhams, there's such a culture of worshipping the deities. It's such a big thing. It's like, it's what's happening in the whole town. Everybody is part of it. That's where it's happening. And there's always a festival, always a special darshan, always a special event in the temple, and just the ordinary is already so special. It's just amazing. So in this way, so many things we celebrate. First day of spring, all the deities in Vrindavan are in yellow, right? First day of summer, every deity is getting watermelons or other types of melons. It's melons everywhere, and wherever you go, you get melon prasad until yeah, yes, that is hot summer. And then there is the period of the water sports of Krishna. And every temple has its own arrangement. In some temples in Vrindavan, they make showers in the temple. I mean, they take a shower and they put them upside down. You see this pipe coming out of the ceiling and a pipe there, and there's a shower upside down, just squirting out all over the temple. I said, wow, this is water sport. Right? But it's very cool at the same time in the hot season. Right? We make waterfalls and put our deities in the midst of waterfalls and like that. And there are boat festivals and so many water sports are there. Yes, naturally in the hot season. Like that, Vrindavan is celebrating the presence of the Lord in the deity form. And so everyone is considering that Krishna is the proprietor. There are bells ringing, right? Like even here, it's a nice thing in Zurich, these bells, the culture of like bells ringing, because that is the culture of calling people to come to churches, right? So that culture is also there in Vrindavan, bells ringing. We just had a big difference with the neighbors in Vrindavan, you know, because the neighbors after, what is it, since 1975, the bell has been ringing, and now they were complaining about the ringing of the bell. Well, we're not, and they wanted us to stop ringing the bell, but we're not going to stop ringing the bell. Never, never. We don't care if you can't sleep. You shouldn't sleep. We'll wake you up with this bell again and again. We have been ringing it for 27 years and we hope to ring it for 2700 years or 27,000 years or 27 millennia. We hope to ring it forever because Srila Prabhupada told us to ring that bell and we're not going to stop ringing the bell. No way. And Prabhupada didn't just say to ring that bell. Prabhupada was saying that I'm measuring the performance of the management by the ringing of this bell. Right. And then, so many times, Prabhupada woke up his servant in the middle of the night and said, "Wake up. Oh, they didn't ring the bell." Right. They didn't ring the bell. They're supposed to ring the bell on the whole hour. You know, and on the half hour like that, right? And they weren't ringing the bell. Prabhupada said, "Go tell them to ring the bell," right? Or the bell is late. You know, the bell is late. The bell is 1 minute late. So many times, Prabhupada was on top of this bell. And how many times did we have to worry about this bell for so many years? I was there in Vrindavan. The bell, the bell, the bell. The rope of the bell has broken. The rope of the bell is breaking. Where do we get a rope right now? The shops are closed. We cannot stop ringing the bell. Tie a dhoti to the bell, but ring the bell, right? The ringing of the bell can never stop. The bell must ring, right? So many times I have been personally be responsible that the ringing of the bell was going on. And it's like, and now the neighbors are telling us to stop ringing the bell. Right? Whoa, no way, you know, no way. We're going to ring this bell. You know, no one's going to stop us from ringing this bell. What to do? We are so sorry. Yeah. Anything else we can do to make you more comfortable, we are ready, but not the bell. So sorry. Yes, we are antisocial, so I know, but we must ring this bell. It's a very merciful bell, you know. Every ring is very kind and merciful. So, this culture of ringing bells is the culture of Vrindavan, and it is going on. And this is a very nice culture. So, we can so much enhance our devotional service by becoming part of this culture of worshipping the deity. Just doing so, we can naturally develop attachment to Krishna immediately. A little bit of asakti already growing. And then the chanting. See, as we're chanting, we change. There is this point that Srila Prabhupada makes, that
If one chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra once, one has changed. One changes. I've done this exercise here already in Zurich in the past by saying Hare Krishna and then asking the audience if they saw any changes. Remember? Or nobody remembers. You don't remember? Okay, forgot, then we'll do it again. Okay, look carefully. Everyone watching? See the expression, everything, right? Look carefully. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Hare Krishna! In? In? Have I changed? Anybody? Have I changed? Look carefully. Yeah? Any change? Yes? Alright, it went very quick. I know. So this time, you don't chant, you just watch. You watch very carefully, you know. Okay, I'll chant. You listen. Okay, you watch. You're watching? Sitting far away. Okay. There we go. Hare Krishna! What happened? Have I changed? Oh, then? Yes? Huh? I smile. Ah. Okay. Maybe, yes. Have I changed? Tell me. No. Have I changed?
Wow, that was not so much, you know. Don't say.
Have I changed? Difficult question, huh? Yes, no, it's not. Actually, yes, I've changed. Because every time we chant, the subtle body changes. Not the gross body. The smile may be there or not. Sometimes I don't smile when I chant. Sometimes, no. Sometimes very serious. Deep. Deep. Yeah. No, we don't always smile. Different moods, a different time. But the subtle body changes. Immediately. One is a different person as soon as one chants once. Chants again changed. More and more, immediately. It is said by chanting Hare Krishna once, one becomes purified of more sinful activities than one can commit in a lifetime. Of course, mind you, there's plenty of lifetimes of sinful activities stored there. So that means we still have to chant quite a bit to get rid of all the sins. But that's how much we change. So by chanting Hare Krishna once, we go lifetimes ahead. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, boom. More than two lifetimes of sinful activities. Kicked out. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, two more. Yes, it goes quick. Of course, you know, there's only a few zillion of more of sinful lifetimes to purify. Anyway, you know, it goes quick. Okay. That was a whole lot of lifetimes there. In this way, we are. It works. So if one goes before the deity to render service, and one chants Hare Krishna at the same time, then one is a different person in front of the deity, and one becomes pure in front of the deity. And the more pure one is in front of the deity, the more one will be able to perceive that the deity is Krishna. The more pure one is, the more one will see actually Krishna there on the altar. Yes. And that's very nice. So, in this way, it all goes hand in hand. We begin to render service to the deity, and suddenly we realize that the deity is not a statue, that the deity is actually real, that the deity is Krishna. We begin to realize it a little bit, because there's something magic about serving the deity. Something is there. And the more we serve, the more it happens. And then we chant, and then our attitude changes, and we change, and Krishna reveals himself more and more. And in this way, our attachment also grows and grows and grows. So like this, we are advancing in the process of devotional service until we become overwhelmed by how wonderful Krishna consciousness really is. Now, it is said in the Nectar of Devotion that there are different kinds of people, and that there are people who have a heart like a little piece of cotton, like a little cotton swab, it says, a little piece of very light piece of cotton. And others have a golden heart, right, which is very grave. Right. So it's said that the people who have the cotton swab heart, right, they are very emotional. Right. And it's like at the, so they very quickly begin to show symptoms of ecstasy. Oh, Krishna! Oh, right. Whereas the others may take a long time, right, to see. So it is not necessarily so that those who express the greatest emotions in their Krishna consciousness are the most attached or the most advanced to Krishna. Right. It may also, true attachment to Krishna has to manifest in the desire to please Krishna, and not so much in a display of all kinds of emotions, but in the mood of trying to serve Krishna and trying to do things for Krishna. That's where one's true attachment to Krishna comes out, not from, oh Krishna, I mean, I cannot stay away from the temple. Oh. Very nice, right? But still better to come to the temple and actually do some service for Krishna. Right. One can show great enthusiasm. Oh, these beautiful stories about Krishna. It is such nectar. Oh. Very nice. But still nicer it is to see that we ourselves are in a story of Krishna. We're in a story of Krishna right now. We do not just have to relish the nectar stories of Krishna in Vrindavan and then he stole the flute. No, really, yes, he... Or rather, Srimati Radharani stole the flute and then he stole it back and all these things. You know. Who has the flute? Yes, who, we will never know. Ah, such stories are there, nectar stories. All right, but we should realize that we are in a nectar story right now, ourselves. This is the nectar story right now. So, we need not only just hear nectar stories. No, the nectar story is right here in the temple. Just see how much nectar is there. Yesterday it was flowing in all directions. Huh? It was really happening. Yeah, like anything. Did you notice it? The valves of the nectar reservoir were right open. Just now, Jai Gopal is back. Right? Have you heard? Have you heard? He makes the mridanga speak. Yeah. Jai Like that, we are hearing. We're hearing all the transcendental sounds everywhere. How much nectar is there? There's no doubt. And Srila Prabhupada is smiling. Yes. My smiling, what's the benefit? Sometimes I smile, sometimes I cry. But Prabhupada's smile is a blessing for the whole world. Prabhupada is such a spiritual master, such an amazing spiritual master. He had actually Krishna Prem. Right? Oh, Krishna Prem, Krishna Prem. Yes. No, not like that. Prabhupada certainly had a golden heart. He was grave. He did not speak about his love for Krishna. Right? That he did not speak about. But he showed his love for Krishna, right, by his intense devotion. Not so much by... Sometimes the devotee said, Did you see the tear in Prabhupada's eye? It was like a diamond. Did you see? All right, that certainly was a miracle, a diamond tear. I've never seen a diamond tear in anyone's eyes. But still, that is not the greatest miracle. The greatest miracle was that Prabhupada simply
lived with all these people who were so far away from Krishna consciousness and tolerated it all and stayed with them. Who would do that, right? And that he lived with the drugged out hippies on Lower East Side, a highly exalted Vaishnava, and that he was patiently encouraging them and giving them so much personal attention, right? So much that he captured their hearts, right? He had the patience to just capture their hearts, and then he carefully fanned the spark more and more, right? Until they were just totally dedicated. Totally dedicated. There's that story of Malati, right? Malati in Mayapur. Malati had to cook in Mayapur for Prabhupada. Prabhupada was living on the land in Mayapur in the hut, just a simple chattai hut, and Malati had to cook. It wasn't easy because the treasurer was a Bengali, right? So she had to go do the shopping, and the Bengali would give her exactly like, you know, a few paisa, here you take, and now you go do the shopping. So then she had to go and buy the vegetables for Bengali prices, being a Western lady. So she had to fight 10 times as much in the market to get the right price. Anyway, so she had to do this. Okay, then she had to be back in time. So then she had the vegetables. And then she had to make the coal stove, so much smoke and so difficult to get this coal to burn, finally burning. Okay, and then cook on this coal stove. You can't turn it low. There's no low flame on a coal stove. There's only one temperature, right? So, you know, it's not easy, huh, to cook on a coal stove. All right, cook on the coal stove. And then Prabhupada wanted hot chapatis, right? They had to be like totally hot. And then just as this was going on, then the secretaries would just storm in the kitchen, take the coal stove, and use it to burn frankincense to drive the mosquitoes out of Prabhupada's hut. And this was all in the middle of the cooking of the chapatis. So one day she decided that she was going to quit, right? And just as she was going to Prabhupada to tell him, "I'm going to quit," Prabhupada said, "Today you have to cook special." Right? So she had no time to say, "I'm going to quit." She said, "Today you have to cook special, because we are having guests. There is a whole group of my God brothers. They're coming today, and I want you to cook." So, well, that was it. Personal order. So it was like absolutely hellish, you know, to do this job, right? So she was like doing it and thinking like, this is the last day I'm doing this. I'm absolutely not doing it anymore. Tomorrow, gotta find somebody else. I'm quitting. And then, with all that struggle, she came in with the prasadam and just brought it in, like trying to kind of quietly bring it in as a lady in front of so many sannyasis. But Prabhupada was not letting her bring it in quietly at all. Prabhupada said, "Oh, here is Malati. She's my disciple. She goes through so much trouble. So much trouble to cook for mommy. She cooks very nice, you see. She has learned very nice, right?" And then, you know, like, they all tasted. "Oh, that's very nice, this, that." Yes. So, how could she quit after that, right? And then Prabhupada said, "Yes, you know, she is so surrendered. She's so surrendered. She would do anything for me." Prabhupada said, "She would cut her throat for me." He said, "And I would cut my throat for her." I love that. You know. After that, well, okay, you know, I'm so like, she kept on cooking, of course. Right? So Prabhupada just extended himself so much, inconceivable, inconceivable. Prabhupada was in India, and his disciple Giriraj was there, and he was from a wealthy American family, so his parents came, and his mother was very upset and said, "You know, our Giriraj, he has to live here in India, and we are very afraid that he will get
some disease and his health is going down. He doesn't look so healthy now, and we are very worried. We would like him to come back to America. And Prabhupada saying, yes, yes. And then he said to the mother, he brought some sandesh, and he said, please taste some sandesh. He said, no, no, mom. He said, yes, yes, yes. No, no, no. Yes, yes, yes. You take, please eat. Oh, I can't take. Yes, you can. You must take. A little, just a little. So she tasted. Oh, she said, very nice. Prabhupada said, yes, very nice. Take more, take more. That was like maybe take, you know. And he said, wow, this is very nice, very tasty. Prabhupada said, yes, not only is this very tasty, it's also very healthy. He said, it's full of protein and full of, like, very nice substance. He said, wow, this is very nice, very, very nice. And Prabhupada said, yes, and I will make sure that your son every day gets, like, plenty of these sweets, you know, so that, like, his health will be very good and he will be very strong and like this, you know. So his mother was like totally, what could she say, you know, she was defeated after that, right? So afterwards the father said, he said to his son, he said, your Prabhupada is very intelligent, very intelligent. Okay, like he is very intelligent. And then the secretary came in, and the secretary said, Prabhupada, everybody loves you so much. And Prabhupada said, that's because I love everybody. And that was his great quality. It wasn't just all Krishna, 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 and no love for the people. No. He saw truly that the human beings, all living beings, were part and parcel of Krishna, and that loving Krishna meant to love people and love the world. And therefore he was a truly loving person amongst people. Right? Right there, loving everybody so much, giving so much love to everyone. And then, you know, Prabhupada would like ask his disciples to do so much, and then after he was just so grateful that they just like, okay, then I'll do even more. Right? This way, he did more than everybody else. Right? He did more than everybody else. He made such a sacrifice. And in this way, Prabhupada spread this movement through love. Right? First of all, right? It was by, yes, he spread the movement through the holy name, no doubt. But he convinced them to follow. He convinced them to accept just by being very gentle and kind and patient and loving and tolerant and appreciative and all these qualities. So these are the qualities of Krishna Prem. Because Prabhupada says, he says that if you love Krishna, then automatically you love his creation. Right? If you love the hand, you love the finger. Right? If you love the nation, you love the citizens. Like that, he explained. That if one loves Krishna, one loves all living beings. And this is how he showed his love of God. Right? So it wasn't something so ethereal, something like going into the deeper, now more ethereal aspects of Krishna consciousness. You see, when we discuss, there is a whole aspect of Krishna consciousness which we cannot see. That is the lila of Radha and Krishna. We cannot see that. I don't see it. You see? Huh? Oh, there's no, we don't see. Only the devotees who are on that topmost level of prem, they may see such pastimes. They may see, but we don't see. We hear about it, but it's still far away because we are here, you know. We have to go in the morning. We don't wake up in ecstasy. We wake up feeling tired. Beep, 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 the alarm clock. Shut up, alarm clock. Not again. Here, the day begins. All right, okay. Anyway, after some time in the bathroom, we're sort of ready, you know, okay, then I'm ready to face the world again.
here we go, right? This is our life, right? And then it's everyday reality, duties, and well, it has to be done. What can you do, you know? Oh, nice things also, but, you know, it's like a mix, right? It's a mix. Yeah, hello. Another call like that, you know. Life is going on. So that's our life. Then we see that in the spiritual world, the world of Radha and Krishna, every moment is like totally ecstatic and wonderful and a blissful experience. And we hear about it, but we're not experiencing something like that exactly, you know. Yeah. So we can't really see that world. We can hear about it, but because we can't have a direct experience of it, it is ethereal. It is ethereal. So Prabhupada did not spend much time with the ethereal, because Prabhupada said that when you are, as long as you have a desire to enjoy through the body, you should become purified through the body. At that time, yes. And then we should function in this physical world, this world where we are. And here we find Krishna. Here we find that nectar. Then we need not so much reach out to that other dimension which is not ours. No, we should find Krishna in our own dimension. That was Prabhupada's point. In this dimension we relate to Krishna because he's here and now. He's here. It's not just that Krishna is there with Radharani. He is, but he's here. He's all pervading. He's here now. Right here with us, ready to deal with us. Krishna is waiting. Are you ready to deal? Are you ready? Are you ready to serve? I'll reciprocate. Are you? Please. Krishna's trying. Yes, you serve. Chant. Yes, go forward. Render service more. Yes, Krishna's eager. It is said that Krishna is much more eager than we are. And the proof is that Krishna appears in this world. He doesn't have to. We have to. We have to take birth in the material world. Krishna doesn't have to. But Krishna comes for our sake. He doesn't have to do anything in this world. I mean, he has a great time up in the spiritual world. What does he have to come here for? And go to Kurukshetra, do this battle, and, you know, to be in the middle of all that. Of course, he's not affected by it. It said, Senayor Ubayor Maje, Krishna was Prahasan and Arjuna Visidantam. Krishna was smiling and Arjuna was lamenting. Right? That's the difference between the Supreme Lord and the conditioned soul. But still, Krishna had no need to come here. So, Krishna is ready for us and he's here. And Prabhupada gives us the connection. So, why do I speak so much about Prabhupada in this particular talk on the Sikshastikam? Because, at the end, it is Prabhupada who is displaying that prema. And others may fall short in their love for Krishna. Right? We do not see such selfless love. You see, real love. Like there was once, there's a story about once there was a child, and there were two ladies who claimed to be the mother of this child. And there was a big fight, and yes, nobody could figure out who the real mother was. So they decided to bring the matter before the king. So the king said, all right. He heard both the ladies, and in the end he said, okay, I will give my judgment. He said, it is impossible to decide who is the mother of this child, and therefore I have decided to give each of them half. Right? Each of them I will give half. We'll cut the child in half, and both the mothers get half. One of the ladies said, no, give the child to her. The king said, that's the mother, you take the child. Simple. Smart king. So, in the same way, it is not he who makes the greatest claim to prema. It is not he who stands up to express his love of God. It is simply he who makes the sacrifice for Krishna, who's ready to humbly and quietly give everything for Krishna. And then in the end, when he's being glorified, Prabhupada says, he said, actually, you know, just as the moon, he said, the moon doesn't have any light of its own. It's only reflecting the light of the sun, isn't it? He said, in the same way, if you see any good qualities in me, he said, actually I don't have any. Just know it to be that the good qualities of my spiritual master are reflecting in me. He said, that's all. That's how he spoke. No credit. When credit was given, then just dismiss it. And just very humbly serve and try everything to give. That is Krishna praying. That is the topmost level. So, this morning I was reading about Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, he was speaking about Hiranyakasipu, and how Hiranyakasipu tried to be very intelligent, and how he tried to cheat Lord Brahma by getting immortality, by asking in a very diplomatic way, that I may not die on the land, not on the water, nor in the sky, nor in the day, nor in the night, not by any weapon, nor by any man, nor by any demigod, nor by an animal, nor by, you know, and he thought like, you know, I mean, I've covered all the possible causes of death. I've got it. Yeah. Right. And it said that Lord Brahma had given the benediction that yes, he could have all this. And then Krishna came, right? And Krishna, he became Lord Nrisingadev, who was not a man, not an animal, and he killed him just at twilight, not in the day and the night. He killed him on the doorstep. It wasn't inside, it wasn't outside. He killed him on his lap. It wasn't on the ground, it wasn't in the air, it wasn't in the water. He killed him with his nails. It wasn't really any weapon like this, you know. There was like he met all the conditions. He met all the conditions. It said, why did he do that? Not to just teach Hiranyakasipu a lesson. No. Simply because Rishi Vakya, these were the words of a saintly personality, of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma had said, right? And Prabhupada said, because Lord Brahma had said, therefore the Lord Krishna felt obliged to keep the word of Lord Brahma, because the Lord keeps his word of his devotee. And Prabhupada said, therefore it is greater to serve the servant of Krishna than to serve Krishna direct. Because if the servant of Krishna says, I'll take you back to Krishna Loka, he said, then Krishna will take you back. So Prabhupada said, very simple. Once Prabhupada was in Washington. He was in Washington, in the United States. And all the devotees of Baltimore had also come, because Baltimore is really close to Washington. So the devotees were there from Baltimore. And they were showing, one devotee showed Prabhupada a picture of the deities in Baltimore. And Prabhupada said, oh, Gornita. He said, oh, they're very nice. And then he said, let's go. And he said, let's go. And Prabhupada meant now. Now, right now, let's get the car and go. Right? So, you know, it's like they left and they rang up. There was one devotee left in Baltimore to take care of the deities. They rang him up. Prabhupada is coming, and he was laughing. Good joke, yeah, thanks a lot. You know. And 1 hour later, Prabhupada was there. Right? And Prabhupada told that devotee, he said, to that devotee, he said, You simply chant 16 rounds and you'll go back to Godhead. Then, is it so simple to go back to Godhead? Yes, it's so simple because the servant of the Lord said it. Rishi said it. And it will then simply to be followed. So this is the wonderful mercy of Srila Prabhupada, that even if we are not having our hair standing on end, even if there are no tears coming in our eyes, even if we are not rolling on the floor in ecstasy, even if we cannot see Krishna face to face, and even if actually these ethereal lilas of Radha and Krishna are a bit high for our mind to understand how this is not lust while we are still feeling lust and all these things, when Radha and Krishna embrace and we just think like, you know, I mean, what's going on here? They are kissing and we are trying to be celibate and like follow principles and, you know, I mean, what's happening here? I get the short circuit in my brain. Even if all that might happen, it doesn't matter, because Prabhupada has promised, and Krishna, Rishi Vakya, by Prabhupada's own say-so, will certainly uphold his promise, without a doubt. Therefore, our service is simply to bring people to the shelter of the lotus feet of Prabhupada, which means to the instructions of Prabhupada. Simply to the instructions of Prabhupada. Let us just try and become as faithful as possible to the instructions of Prabhupada. There is nothing more wonderful, because there is no greater mercy. It is through that mercy that we will all go back to God without end. That's how nice it is here at the feet of His Divine Grace. And by the mercy of His Divine Grace, we can fulfill the purport of the Sikshastika. That is how we will take full advantage of the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, I'll end with that. Thank you very much. Any questions, any comments?
So I see that as we wrote this on time to the master, time to plan, but sometimes we forget that the goal is you ask for Krishna, you offer the lotus,
Krishna has already taken care of that problem. Prabhupada already knew that that would happen. So therefore Prabhupada arranged the temple and the temple program. And in the temple program we're being reminded. You know, we're reminded. Who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Krishna. What's the goal of life? Devotional service. What do? We chant Hare Krishna. How do you attain perfection? Take shelter of Prabhupada's lotus feet. How do you do that? Follow his instructions. This will give the perfection of life. That's the goal. And in different ways, one can chant mantras for the deities, one can cook in the kitchen, one can clean the temple, one can translate. There are so many ways to serve. Mahima. Mahima. The great merciful Lord. Mahima. Mahima. Like that. We get reminded. See, he reminds me of Mahima. It's my good fortune. So let's just be with the devotees, let's just go through the whole, to the temple programs, etc. And we'll be reminded. That's what they're designed for, to remind us. Any other question?
Oh.
Thank you very much for your appreciation. And I'm also appreciative of this nice temple and the nice devotees who are maintaining this temple for so many years. And the world has its ups and downs. So even when there were some difficulties, they stayed and they kept it going. I can see from my visits over the year, come sometimes, but I can see it's going up. Yeah, devotees sometimes feel strong about that. Of course, we're not always happy with electronics in India, you know. Electricity in India is not a blessing, it's a curse. It may be a curse all over the world, but here it's well hidden, you know, that it's a curse. Here it looks like a blessing, but in India there's no doubt that it's a curse. Oh, boy. And since they have loudspeakers, in India, loudspeakers are really loud speakers. And it's like, it's intense. And they have no sense of like, that three different speakers may be blaring three different melodies and they may all mix and they don't mind. They don't mind at all. It adds to the ecstasy. And we are like, the Western ears are suffering. So we have gone through all kinds of ways to sabotage the speakers, cut the wires of the speakers, to shoot the speakers. the speaker leelas are certainly didn't stop with that message, you know. In fact, yeah, many speaker wars we have seen. Someone had speakers and then the other party got bigger speakers. Anyway, what to do? This is modern times. We have to deal with that also. Loudspeakers. Electricity is not a blessing. I know in the West it's difficult, and if you turn it off tonight, I will also go, okay. but if we'd prepare and say, okay, you know, let's give it up, I would go for it. No more computers. We lose a little bit, but anyway, you know, we can tolerate it. No more email. Fantastic. Yeah, you know. Exactly. You know, I used to live in Vrindavan, right? And in the beginning, when I lived in Vrindavan, in that was in 1978, there was one telephone, and it sometimes worked, right? But only for a local call, right? And there's no question that you could like ring out or anything like that. There was nothing else. There was the mail. The letters would always come 6 months too late, right? So then it was too late to answer them, right? So in this way, you were just cut off from the world. And we had to get our water. I was getting my bathing water with a bucket from the well, right? And drinking water you get from a pump somewhere else. And like that, that we kept in a clay pot. We slept on some mats on the floor. Clothes were kept in a metal trunk so that the bugs wouldn't eat them. And that was life, right? Very simple. And it was very, very nice. Very nice. These were probably, I mean, I remember them as the best years of my life, right? Life was so simple. No telephones, nothing, no communication. Forget about the world. Be in Vrindavan, remember Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, live simple, and be happy. That's what it was. Nowadays, you know, like all of this Hare Krishna movement is high tech, you know. So here I am having to keep up every day with at least 20 email messages, you know. I wouldn't mind if we'd go back to those days. Just the one telephone from down. Okay, well, it's time for the night. Huh? Krishna's going to take rest now. Already taking rest, I guess. We also. The curtain. Okay.
So it was very nice being here with you in Zurich. Tomorrow morning I'm leaving early, so I'll be here for Mongolia to chant some japa and then I'll be gone. So thank you very much. I hope to see you again next time. Hare Krishna.